Good morning, everyone. I randomly bought a parasol with me this morning, and I was like, why did I bring this? And apparently it was so I could almost trip over it as I approached the stage. Thank you for having me here today. I was really honored to be asked to speak to you all today. First, I would like to congratulate Steve and Michelle. I'd also like to congratulate Kennedy Ryan, Minx Malone, and Nisha Sharma for their Rita wins last night. Congratulations to all of the winners, but especially to these history makers who are hopefully helping to usher in an era of expanded inclusivity in RWA. Second, I'm going to ask a favor of everyone. If I puke, cry, trip, or do anything else embarrassing, do not post pics on Twitter. If you do, don't put it in the RWA hashtag, at least. I would appreciate that. So I was really nervous coming up here, like leading up to it, but now that I'm standing here, I'm actually not that nervous anymore because all of you are book lovers like me. All of you love romance, are here to support books, and I'm assuming diversity, inclusivity, and all of the things that I look for in publishing and in the literary world. So we're all friends. I'm not nervous anymore. But I was really nervous leading up to this, and I had like a huge writer's block, and I literally finished this speech in a blanket fort on the couch in my hotel room this morning. So my first thing will be to give a tip to anyone who's writing. If you're on deadline and really stressed out, just like get on the couch, put a blanket over your head, and it really helps. You can knock it out like that. So for some reason, I became convinced that I needed to speak like specifically and exclusively about libraries, and I just ran into this huge block, and then I met up with my friend Courtney, and she was like, you don't have to talk about libraries? She's like, they're librarians, they know how libraries work, and I was, like, oh, you're totally right. So if everyone sees Courtney Milan, they can thank her for not having to sit through like a PowerPoint about the history of libraries in America, or whatever it was like going to do it together. One of the reasons I was having such a hard time with the whole library thing is that I was like, I need to like have like a really amazing childhood story about libraries and how they changed my life. And I don't really have a story like that. I've always loved books, and libraries have always been a part of my life, from the bookmobile that used to come around to the Catholic school that I went to for a couple of years, to the public school libraries where I would hang out and read in the corner like the true baby nerd that I was. But libraries also struck fear into my heart for a while when I was a kid, because there was a local branch library right across the street from my family's house in Jersey City. Going to the library was like this really fraught thing for me for some reason, because I would get in there and there were like so many books to choose from that I would just basically short circuit. Like I can only take how many books out of here, so I would like walk around for hours like a little weirdo and then just grab anything and leave. And there was also, you know, the fact that it seemed somehow too good to be true, unlimited free books. I grew up with fairy tales, and I knew that nothing came for free, so there was probably like some weird like devil bargain going on that I wasn't aware of if I walked out of the library with the book. So libraries always like randomly stress me out. I know, it doesn't make sense. But one day I checked out some books. They were some YA books, which I already felt like a little taboo because I wasn't a teenager, but it was like, okay, the librarian didn't say anything, everything's cool. I was already reading adult books from my parents' library, but, you know, my parents were not librarians who could, like, yell at me or get me in trouble. So I got the books, and I loved them, and then the due date came to return the books, and I did not return them. And I became so stressed out by this that I was like, if I bring them back late now, the librarian is going to be upset with me. And I didn't bring them back, and I was like on the run from this library right across the street from my house, like waiting for like a spotlight to shine out of their window onto me when I left my house and the police sirens to wail. That didn't happen, obviously. I was just, they were probably just like, why didn't this girl bring her books back? She's like right there. And in my memory, I have dropped those books off at a Dropbox once I figured out that those existed, but that honestly could just be something I'm telling myself to make so I can sleep at night and not be a book thief. So I apologize to that library, and for the fact that you have a flagrant anxiety-driven book thief as your presenter today. So books and stories have always been so important to me. I, like many of you, I was the kid who read under the blanket with the flashlight. I would also read in the closet with the flashlight. Flashlights were my secondary obsession after books, and they still are kind of. It's a whole weird thing, which my husband is always like, why do you need another flashlight? We have like 20 flashlights. Okay. Anyway, so I read any and everything I could get my hands onto. And at least 60% of that stuff was stuff I technically shouldn't have been reading for another 10 years at least. If any of you were at ALA last year, you may have heard my mom, who's sitting right here, mosey up to a conversation and proceed to tell everyone about how I had taken her copy of Anne Rice's The Taking of Sleeping Beauty. wrapped it in a book cover made from a brown paper bag like we did at school, and wrote another, like, less conspicuous title onto it. I'm preempting you telling the story now. to my credit, I love fairy tales, and I love Anne Rice. I had no idea what the book was about when I took it from my mom, and then once I started it, I had to finish it. So, of course, I had to carefully take that brown paper bag, fold it, and come up with a title, which I really wish I could remember for the fake title for the book. But as a kid, I would get so absorbed in a book that my family could yell my name in my ear, and I would not respond because I was so absolutely engrossed in the books. Even though I would be physically sitting in the living room or whatever I was doing to avoid cleaning my room and other chores, my mind, and like maybe even my soul if we want to get metaphysical, were someplace else. Sometimes I brought parts of those books back to the real world with me, like when I became obsessed with Harriet the Spy and began keeping tabs on everyone in my neighborhood. Which did not work out well. I won't get into all of that, but I also loved the book Matilda and by Roald Dahl, and grew increasingly disillusioned as I realized that, unlike my ability to channel aspects of Harriet the Spy into my everyday life, I would not be developing telekinetic powers that I could use to serve justice to awful adults. I'm still mad about it. I'm still waiting for the powers to kick in. Maybe one day. And though I consumed countless books, going through my parents' bookcase, scraping up money to buy books, asking to receive them as gifts, and yes, becoming a hardened criminal who misused her public library, I didn't often come across stories that featured people who looked like me, my family, or my friends. I grew up in the Bronx and Jersey City, vibrant areas with people from almost anywhere in the world that you can think of. So many of my friends came from families that had come to the United States to see what life they could make for their children here, like my West Indian grandparents, or were Black Americans with roots that bound us inextricably, no matter how hard people have tried to cut those ties, and they have tried, to the fabric and history of America, like my other grandparents and like my grandmother here. And the books I read, the books that were available to me through the decisions of both publishing professionals and those who acquired books at libraries, people mostly had pale skin. To anyone with basic deductive reasoning skills, whiteness seemed to be the factor that made a character story worth being told, or at the very least worth being shared. I read widely, books meant for both children and adults, And at a very young age, I reached a point of frustration that I mentally, and sometimes physically, if whiteout was available, changed the description of characters in books as I read them. Okay, I'm going to make clear here, I did not do this to library books. I'm not a monster. I only did this to my own personal books. So my career as an editor started very early with me crossing out blue eyes and replacing it with brown eyes and adding a caret to insert the word brown before skin. My career as an author started with the knowledge that somewhere inside of me was the ability to write stories that already included a variety of people with no whiteout or mental gymnastics required. And while libraries were somewhat scary to young me, they have played an indisputably huge role in my life as an adult. Before I was published, I was allowed to start a romance book club at Jefferson Market Library down in the East Village, or in Greenwich Village, rather. And in case you were wondering, you probably were not, but my first attempt at starting a book club was when I, at the tender age of 7, I bought my copy of the pop-up book of the Facts of Life to school to have a discussion with my friends about this interesting book that I had gotten from the Strand. My teachers at the Catholic school were not into that at all. Unlike the librarians at Jefferson Market Library, they were not supportive of my book club, and it ended that day. But the romance book club was really supported by the librarians. It allowed me to indulge my love of searching for inclusive romances to read and discuss with fellow romance lovers. I also taught a class at that library, which was called Romance for Beginners, because I was a beginner and I thought that was really clever. In retrospect, I was like, who was I teaching people about how to write a romance? I wasn't even published yet. But obviously, I was like really interested in getting to know and work with other romance writers, and the library supported that. And I was also allowed to create some romance-related programming. And the idea for the first inclusive historical romance anthology I took part in, called For Love and Liberty, was conceived after a book club meeting at this library where we lamented the lack of diversity in American historical romance, or more importantly, I was frustrated by the lack of diversity in American historical romance available and in circulation at the libraries, which was a requirement for the books I was using for the book club. So for me, the library became a place where I was able to build a community to connect with others who loved Happily Ever Afters as much as me, but also where I labored each month to find inclusive romance that was actually in circulation. This was obviously a few years ago, and this is changing for the better. This is why when people send me pictures of my books alongside other inclusive romances with a library sticker on the book or gracing a library display, it means everything to me. On a personal level, knowing that my book is available for someone to forget to return because they have bad time management skills is really amazing. But even more amazing is the fact that my books are there, other diverse books are there on the physical and virtual shelves, and they're easily accessible to readers in a way that wasn't the norm even just a couple of years ago. Now I'm going to make a hard turn and going to circle back to the books that had me on the run from my local library branch. I hadn't thought of them for a long time, except, you know, slight rise in my anxiety when I step into a library. Then I remember, like, I'm an author now, I'm an adult, they're not going to arrest me. But when I was thinking about this, and also I was at home, like, looking through books that I read when I was younger, and one of those books was a memoir called The Cage, written by Ruth Minsky Sender. And it was a book about the Holocaust. It chronicled the experience of a 13-year-old girl named Riva living in Poland in 1939. And when I immersed myself in Riva's life, I followed along as her family was forced from their homes and into a ghetto, as her and her siblings were separated from her mother and she was forced to become their caretaker. as Riva was imprisoned in a concentration camp where she was stripped of her personal belongings and placed in a cage by cruel and inhumane government policies. Riva survived to tell her story, and one day that story was published, and one day it got pulled from the library shelf by a little black girl in Jersey City who immersed herself in it and hoped that such cruelty was no longer possible in the world she lived in. Okay, now's the part where you don't take pictures if I start crying. So I'm a grown-up now, basically. I know that cruelty is possible, and unfortunately, it's becoming common and mundane. Right now, as we sit together in this room, there are children in cages again. There are families being separated. There are people being forced to live in degrading conditions for no reason other than the whims of a government have decided that they're not worthy of humane treatment. The people in those cages are no different than the people from anyone passing you outside on the street in the war of humanity outside the hotel that is Times Square. They are absolutely not different from you and me. I've read a lot of books, so have all of you. You know that in every story, no matter the genre, a protagonist can think, this will never happen to me, whether it's something good or bad, and then it does. Books can be the dim flicker of hope that we follow through our personal and our shared dark nights of the soul. The ability to completely lose ourselves in a story, to travel to other countries, to other worlds, and to vicariously experience all of the emotions under the sun without leaving our couch is a kind of freedom. The people in those cages do not have toiletries. They certainly don't have books. They do not have a way to escape, literally or figuratively. The only story they have is the reality that they've been shoved into. They cannot place a bookmark between the pages, put it aside, and come back to it when they're better able to deal with it. So, spoiler alert, as I said, I never developed those telekinetic powers I obsessed over as a child. And when all of the reports of terrible things happening on the news get overwhelming, that powerlessness becomes palpable. But the reality of the situation is that I'm not powerless, and none of us here are. We're immersed in the story as it's unfolding, even if we wish that weren't the case, and we have the power to influence it in ways small and large. We have the power to document what is happening, to contact our representatives, to donate to organizations like Racist Texas and the Young Foundation, to learn our rights, and if we're able to do so, to learn how to use whatever privilege we have to help neighbors and vulnerable people in our communities. We can protest, and we can make our voices heard. As librarians, you have the power to curate your collections so that books that keep people informed on the current state of American politics, whether those books are nonfiction, YA, or romance, are readily available. You have the ability to create programming that keeps people informed. You can make the decision to center the voices of people most knowledgeable about the circumstances of today because it is their own story. Publishers, you can work on realistic pricing plans for libraries so that they won't have to blow their budgets trying to stock the diverse, inclusive books. That are so desperately needed today. And to avoid giving anyone who might be reluctant to stock diverse books a good reason not to. One day, when all of this is in the past, people will write stories based on what is happening now at the border and around the country, and the books will be carried in libraries. A young person will pull the book from the shelf, immerse themselves in it, and when they're done, think, oh, thank goodness this couldn't ever happen again. Maybe, unlike me, they'll actually return the book on time. Maybe, unlike me, they'll be right. But the book will exist one day because the cages exist now. The question we must ask ourselves today and every day is what part each of us will play in that story and how that book will end. So thank you. Love one another and abolish ICE.